Hey guys, and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor, and I'm going to be your host today. Joining me, once again, is none other than Drew Garrison. Drew, how you feeling?
Well, it's tax season here in America, so all my Americans, you know how I'm doing.
So not it's great.
This is like the one time of year where I allow myself to like just be angry at the world and everything. It's like before, it's like, okay, don't let everything take you down. Then tax season comes up. Luckily, you guys chose Blade Runner to be one of the movies that we're talking about, and I couldn't be happier about that. So, very glad that we get to be doing this one. So,
well, speaking of which, Drew, we have to introduce the man who pitched this a long time ago, and I ultimately went, you know what, we're doing it, because we are on this watch list tour that we've been wanting to do these movies for a long time,
and TV shows.
Beginning of 2024, we decided to say, fuck it, we're doing it, and we've done it with a few movies now. We've done it with Avatar The Last Airbender, and now we are doing it with Blade Runner. And the man who originally pitched it, Mr. Tristan Benz, how you feeling today? The time has finally come.
Let me tell you, guys, I've seen things you would not believe, all right? Like Dune 2. Everyone, we're here to talk about Dune 2. Great movie. Everyone should see
it's,
it.
It's when nobody else is doing a secret Dune 2 spoiler talk.
Dune 2. Let me tell you, long live the fighters, boys. Long live the fighters. I'm trying to lead y'all to paradise. I'm quite well. Excited to talk about Blade Runner. I'm a Blade Runner fan.
You know what, Tristan? I think we're going to have a little bit of time. I don't think this is going to be a massively long episode.
I hope not, because I'm hungry.
Since we're not doing a Dune 2 spoiler talk for now, we are going to do something down the road, most likely. But for now, we don't plan to do Dune 2 spoiler talk. But since you are the Dune lover on this podcast,
the Dune dude, if you will,
you're the Dune dude. So please give us your quick review on Dune 2.
I will be shocked if I love any movie this year more than Dune 2. Like if I will be very surprised if this is not my movie of the year, unless. Unless they really do cast Hayden Christensen as Shadow in Sonic 3, then all right, we might have to cut
there.
But
Matt, this is why we call you the arbiter of culture.
I'm the arbiter of culture. Come on, I mean the teaser they played the sting from Live and Learn, so they clearly know ball. Denis Villeneuve was cooking with Dune 2. I mean, it's all my favorite parts of the Dune novel, so I was predisposed to enjoy it anyway. But no, it's a great time. I highly recommend everyone see it. It's gonna leave you questioning everything you thought you knew. You're just like, damn, that shit was powerful. Especially if you watch Dune 1 right before you go into Dune 2, just treat it as one big movie since it's just the first book. I tell you what, if we do in fact get Dune Messiah as the third film in the trilogy, and he sticks the landing as well as he has with Dune's Part 1 and 2, this could be one of the best movie trilogies of all time. Certainly the best sci-fi trilogy.
That's really high praise.
It's high. Like, hey, it's high. And I'm not the only one saying this. Isn't just me, doing my normal Tristan, hype sort of.
I do the same thing. I can't blame you.
If you can look online, I'm not the only one saying like, damn, this. If he nails it, like this could be it. This could be one of the best trilogies of all time because it is. It's peak. It's real good. Almost as good as Blade Runner 2049, also by Denis Villeneuve, which is the sequel to this film that we're talking about today, bringing it back.
You beat me to the transition there, Tristan. You saw the title, dear listeners. You know the deal. Today, we are talking about Blade Runner. Here's a synopsis for Blade Runner, courtesy of IMDb. Quote, a Blade Runner must pursue and terminate four replicants who stole a ship in space and have returned to Earth to find their creator. End quote. And here's some of the cast for the film, along with director and writer credits. Again, this is coming from the Internet Movie Database, directed by Ridley Scott. The screenplay was done by Hampton Fancher and David Webb Peoples, based on the novel by Philip K. Dick. The main cast goes as follows. Harrison Ford as Deckard. Sean Young. Hey, Sean Young, who was in Dune 1984.
Shout out to Sean fucking Young!
She got a little more to do in this movie. That's not saying anything, but...
No, it's not saying a lot, but...
Man. It's such a low bar. But Sean Young as Rachel. Rutger Hauer as Roy Batty. Daryl Hannah as Pris. Breon James as Leon. Joanna Cassidy as Zora. Joe Turkel as Tyrell. William Sanderson as Sebastian. M. Emmett Walsh as Bryant. And the man, the myth, the legend, Edward James Olmos as Gaff. Side note, by the way, I've never seen Edward James Olmos in anything where he was relatively younger.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I saw him in Battlestar Galactica, and the entire movie, I'm like, this guy looks so familiar. And then I go to IMDb, and I'm like, oh, that's the guy from The Thing. And, you know, it's just, it's the little things, guys. It's the little things.
I like how you phrase that as it's the guy from the thing, because my mind immediately went to you, Taylor, going, oh, it's the guy from The Thing that did The Thing, and he likes The Thing and The Thing. Yeah,
exactly. But getting into our spotlight, a member of the crew or a section of the crew segment, we got to come up with a name for it, by the way.
The crew spotlight, guys.
Crew spotlight. I don't know. We'll workshop it. We'll workshop it. We'll figure it out, guys. So I'm going to kick us off, though, and I'm picking the team that designed the sets, because although I don't think this is a perfect movie, I did really love the world of Blade Runner itself, and as somebody who had never seen Blade Runner before doing it for this retrospective, man, watching it and then realizing so much had been inspired by Blade Runner, so much in the sci-fi realm had taken from that world and clearly loved it and wanted to do their own thing with that setting. So really did love the world. I felt like the sets were great. It was pretty funny how... when does this take place? 2019?
Yes.
L.A.? It rains a lot in this very futuristic version of 2019 L.A. It was like Gotham City. Tristan, who are you going with?
James Hong. Shout out to James Hong. Anytime James Hong's in anything, you're like, wow, what a goat. And he played Hannibal Chu. He's the guy who makes the eyes for the replicants in this.
Yeah, he was a standout.
He's not, you know, he's a standout. He's a standout. Because anytime you see James Hong, you're like, damn, that motherfucker has been acting for a while. And he looks pretty much the same. He's always looked kind of old. So it's like, you know, I mean, then again, he is... Let me see, 95. Let me see, this was 40 years ago. So even then he was 50. All right, he was still already. God, man, he was. Point being, James Hong was great. And you really feel bad for him in that scene. Like, this is not going to go well for you, James Hong. This is really upsetting. So it's always nice when you get a good character actor that you can recognize. And they're just there to chew up the scenery and then, you know, put their whole foot in it for a moment there.
Some actors also just have always seemed old. Like, as soon as you said that, I thought of Christopher Lloyd and Steve Martin. I just, both of those actors just, they've always been just older aged to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they've always kind of remained that. Like, Christopher Lloyd, like, he's getting up there now.
Oh, yeah.
But, man, for a while, Christopher Lloyd was just like, is he 50? Is he 70? I don't know.
Or is he 29?
Yeah, I get it.
Who can tell?
Yeah. Drew, who are you going with?
Oh, hold on. I wanted to, like, talk about old actors that you don't see young a lot. For me, it's always Morgan Freeman and Samuel L. Jackson. I cannot imagine Morgan Freeman without his wrinkles. It's just ingrained in my head.
That's a good point. Samuel L. Jackson less so, just because I think we've seen Samuel L. Jackson's entire... It's weird, like, we just seen him grow. 3 years of just young man to where he is right now.
And even as a young man, he just looks the same now. And he doesn't look his age now. Like, he looks younger.
Yeah, he looks young.
So it's like, all right, he's just always kind of looked 50.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, especially compared to, like, Christopher Lloyd or Morgan Freeman, to where they've always just had that older...
They've always looked old.
...vibe to them. Yeah. And we're not saying that in a bad way, just to be clear.
Not
it's
in
just
a bad
like
way.
The vibe you're getting is in that you would trust that they gave you advice kind of feeling. That's just the vibe they give off. And they've always had that.
Agreed.
So, Drew, who are you going with?
Yeah, as for my casting call-out... Yeah, I would have to say, kind of piggybacking off of the sets, the lighting. I feel like the lighting kind of pulls in this movie, because whenever, like, it's raining most of the time, but the light is still bouncing off in, like, pretty cool ways. But my favorite, absolute favorite, has to be when we're in Tyrell's office. Every time we're there, it's just
beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Do you like our owl?
I think this goes with the lighting, but I love how throughout the movie there's a point to where each of the replicants, you can see like something going on with their eyes, like the lighting in them kind of change. So like I don't think that's a direct like has to do with just the lighting crew, but it was a nice little addition to it, I would say. And I don't know when we're going to be able to get into that, so I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah, agreed.
But I don't have a prelude today, because, I mean, I wanted to go into this movie blind, and I didn't want to look anything really up about it. Do you guys have anything to share before we get into our general thoughts?
It is better than the book. My next thing is going to piss off Tristan, just because he loves the movie so much. I'm not a huge fan of the sequel.
I just came so close to hanging up. You have no fucking idea.
Like, yeah, I knew.
I don't even know if I want to be on this episode after you just said that shit.
I knew. Like, I love this one. It's just the sequel bothers me. Like, you can get on me on that if I'm on the Blade Runner 2049. Episode, but
you
it's
know
like...
what, Drew, for your own health, maybe don't be on it. Maybe don't be on it, because you come at me with that sort of tomfoolery, and we're gonna have a problem.
Tristan, we cannot have another international incident on our hands. The
I
UN
mean,
already
hey,
fined us before.
Well, I tell you what, you better get your fucking purse strings taut. Because you keep saying that tomfoolery, and we're gonna have some issues. All right, I'm gonna send a Blade Runner after you. You know, how do I know you're not a replicant?
Yeah, Tristan, if anyone was a replicant, it would be you. The amount of crap you've got through,
debatable. Who's to say? I've heard it both ways.
Tristan versus Drew in a boxing match, alongside the next Jake Paul fight. Who says no?
I mean, hey, if that's what it takes to
you both
knock
can
some sense into
fight
them.
Jake Paul.
True.
I'd rather not do that.
Agreed.
So let's go ahead and get into our general thoughts. All right, let's talk about this film. Tristan, you're the one who originally pitched it. What are your general thoughts on Blade Runner?
I mean, it's an iconic movie. It's so influential for a lot of science fiction. You know, not tying it purposely to Dune, but in a similar way to the Dune novel is to, you know, sci-fi as a whole. Like, this is a big, I'd say, benchmark for any sort of like futuristic cyberpunk sort of vibe. Like, this is the foundation for so many visions of what the future could look like, and for that alone, I think this movie deserves props. But I think it also deserves a lot of credit for not being as cookie cutter or black and white as, you know, people would necessarily expect. It's like, oh, okay, so the guys just hunt down evil robots, you know, whatever. But it's like, well, you know, they're not just robots. They're, you know, are they sentient people? Do they have free will? Like, you know, it grapples with a lot of questions. Like, is Deckard, you know, a good person? Whatnot? Answer, clearly no.
No.
It's there's a lot of nuance to this movie that you might not necessarily expect coming into it, but you know, every time you watch it, this is one of those things where I see something new every time I watch it. And for that alone, I think it's, you know, I think it's a great movie, great picture, definitely a classic and something people should watch if they haven't.
I'd add on to that by going, it's not cookie cutter in the sense that also whenever you see the world, you're like, okay, this is going to be like a futuristic sci-fi. But then throughout, I don't know if you guys ever got this vibe about it, but I got a little noir kind of detective vibes.
Yeah. No, and it's supposed to be a noir story. Yeah.
So it's just, it's a combination of a lot of stuff. And this was what it happened in 1982. This film came out. And to be an action movie. 80s movie. An action, yeah, 80s action 80s. Movie to be, it has action in it. Oh, yeah, but like you said, it's more about like the nuance of it and what you see. I think the most popular thing recently was Westworld. A lot of the ideas that they brought up of like, what would robots or androids, like, would they be sentient? That kind of thing. That all, I think, stems from Blade Runner. I think it's very clear after watching Blade Runner that you're like, okay, this is where, if not the, where this originated from, where it became popular.
Yeah.
In terms of entertainment.
Its impact is hard to deny.
Agreed.
And I think you hit a nail on the head when just not being a movie that you would expect from its time. And also being a movie you would expect from its time at the same time, I guess. But
you mean that period of movies when everything was dark and gray?
Yeah.
Not like color palette wise, but like actual like morality wise.
Yeah, in that kind of sense. But also just in that kind of, it's less action packed than your Demolition Man's or what we would say in the 90s would Die Hard and all that kind of stuff. But again, it's not supposed to be. This is not that kind of movie, and I think it does thrive with that. I think it still does have some problems, but we'll get into that. Drew, what are your thoughts on Blade Runner?
Like, I really have nothing else to add because you guys pretty much hit the nail on the coffin. It's like, when you think about sci-fi, and if I'm being honest, mostly cyberpunk in general, it's like Blade Runner is the movie that pretty much inspired all of it. It's like, it's still being used as inspiration to this day. I think one of my most recent encounters with it was Cyberpunk 2077.
What a game. What a turnaround that game had.
I know. It's like, it still has a lot of problems, but it's like, it's still fun to play.
Like, yeah, I like it. I like it. Yeah. You know, I'm pro Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing how much this movie has inspired literally everything cyberpunk and everything. And I find it absolutely hilarious that this came out around the same time Keanu Reeves had his own delve into cyberpunk, which then brought cyberpunk. It's like this whole cacophony that all cyberpunk will affect each other in some way. But yeah, Blade Runner is just amazing. It brings up moral quandaries. It doesn't try to glorify its hero. Well, not even hero, protagonist. It really makes you ask questions about like potential new life forms and like just what are we to try and play God? Something that I think is very adept today with us trying to create AI and make it as human as possible.
We need to cut that out.
It's like, we can barely handle each other. Can we? Do you really think that we will be able to handle a new life form?
Have we watched any movie? You know, have we watched Blade Runner or Terminator or anything?
But getting into Blade Runner itself, something you said, Drew, I thought was very interesting. That, yeah, Deckard is not a hero. Like, at best, I would say anti-hero, but I wouldn't say there's a hero in this story. It's just the way it's written is literally supposed to be like, yeah, Deckard's somebody who's deeply flawed that, yeah, you're rooting for him to take these replicants down. But then by the end, you're like, well, shit, you know what? I don't know if I should have been doing that.
It's like, I don't know, guys. I think this guy's a jerk, like not a good person.
he may have been killing sentient people this whole time. I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was it Ridley Scott or was it a scriptwriter? Like, he, you know, it's clear that Deckard is not supposed to be a good person. Like, someone who worked on the film, I think it's Ridley Scott. I could be totally wrong, but I saw this online.
It's Ridley Scott.
He was saying that, like, he was comparing Deckard to, like, you know, an SS officer. Like, hey, he's just following orders. Like, and he's hunting down and killing these people. Like, you know, whether or not they are people is obviously the crux of the film. And it's a debate that, you know, people still have to this day. But, like,
they're people. Come on, guys.
Following orders. Oh, yeah, they're people. He was just following orders, just going around and just blowing people away. Although, that being said, they are people. I tell you what, I'm not pro Blade Runner killing replicants. But Triss was scary as hell. And I'm like, you know what? Put some bullets in her, because that's a thing that doesn't, when she's doing them backflips with that crazy ass wig and the weird leotard and the makeup.
Like, I did not like this.
I'm like, that's not a thing that needs to exist in this world. Like, put that down.
That scene sticks out in a bad way to me.
So, just FYI, whenever I see that scene, that's what I imagine a true live action Harley Quinn doing whenever, like, she's with the Joker and stuff. It's like, yeah, that's how I see her acting, being creepy as hell.
Yeah, there was some Harley vibes there, but I get to the extent to where what she was designed for and acrobatics being part of that, and why would she know how to, like, she wouldn't be a killing machine soldier like Batty is, so I get that, but at the same time, it was too weird for me in a movie that I was just like, all right, man, here's the ending, let's get into it. And then that scene happens, and it takes me out of it. The convulsing on the ground after being shot, the lighting.
That's when I felt most bad for her. It's like, dang, her life just turned to straight pain and everything. And it's like, it's the one death that I actually thank Decker for doing, because there was nothing else for her but death to escape that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I still dislike the scene, but it's like, it's the one time I'm like, okay that someone died.
Put her out of, like, her misery.
Yeah,
misery he caused. I don't know if we can give him props for that.
Oh, hell no, I'm not giving him props at all.
But at the end, you realize, like, at least for me, I was like, oh, yeah, clearly they're sentient. And you now realize why also Deckard had gone on this darker path, and why he's always drinking, and why he retired in the first place, is because he had started to have those doubts himself. Everything that he was working for was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's been forced to go back again. And then at the end of the movie, when it's pretty much at that point confirmed, Deckard is a replicant himself, that's just an entire other layer of... I mean, you want to go ahead and get into it? We can get into it right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the main question this movie brings up.
It's the one that everyone focuses on, and I just need to say it. He wasn't a replicant. I get that they brought up the idea he questioned if he was, but he wasn't. I'm sorry, it's true. It's like, I know that a lot of fan theories love the idea of him being a replicant. There's too many problems and holes in that, but he wasn't a replicant. I know, and that's one of my main problems with 2049, of just making him a replicant.
Well, it doesn't just make him a replicant. It's fucking Jared. Yeah, that's a spoiler, but that's not. They don't confirm that in 2049.
I'd rather not get in 2049 spoilers, just because I hadn't seen it yet. But to talk about the Deckard replicant theory here, because again, it's the last thing the film wants to bring up. And I think, as you just mentioned, though, it is what you said, the most popular thing about the film, the biggest debate. And although this is my first time getting into debate, I would probably lean more towards he is, simply because the thing with Gaff at the end, what he was to Rachel, saying like, oh no, they implanted your memories, you are it was from the niece of Tyrell. That's what Gaff was for Deckard. That's the way I saw it, at least. I feel like it's hard to ask you guys, because you guys do have another movie to go off of. So, I guess, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I will go off of just just this movie alone. So while I do like the idea and everything, and that brings up the question of could Decker be a replicant and everything, I feel as though like the biggest problems with that are just the holes that put in the movie. One, Tyrell's niece is the first of these replicants and everything, and that puts a big problem with just, oh, when was Deckard created? How long could he have been with this, with the lifespans that they could not expand or just refused to expand? Then the retirement, which is another big problem. It's like, why would they even allow this to retire? Allow him to retire? Why would they even allow him to just stop doing what he was literally programmed to do if he was a replicant? But the biggest thing I think is like it takes away from the core theme. It's like, oh, these replicants are kind of more human than the humans in this. We don't want to see them as real people.
There's a man versus Terminator kind of theme to it.
Yes.
In a sense, throughout the movie. As you can kind of see, the one thing I will say in your favor, Drew, is that the replicants are supposed to be stronger. What was it? Stronger and more agile?
Yes.
Than humans? Okay. They're supposed to be stronger and more agile than humans. Deckard gets bodied.
A lot.
Everybody. Which I did
every 5 seconds, you're like, damn, this man is getting his shit pushed in.
And if you were making someone whose whole point was to take down other replicants, you would think he'd be a better version of that, at least. At least put him on equal footing. But no, Deckard is not. He can't keep up with replicants at all.
But see, Drew, I feel like the problem with your assumption, your assertion right now, like, I mean, personally, I never really, even just watched this movie, I never really thought he was a replicant anyway. I thought it was ambiguous. But, like, you're assuming that he was designed by Tyrell specifically to be a Blade Runner instead of just, hey, we're just going to make this person to see if he can be real and we're just going to stick him out in the world. Like, I don't necessarily think if he was a replicant that the police department was aware that he was a replicant. Like, because he's just so real.
My whole thing is, like, it's a lot to try and explain that Deckard could be a replicant and a lot of holes in him being a replicant. And also just with the theme of the movie and everything, it just doesn't make sense for him to be a replicant. Like, I get, like, it adds a darker edge to it. Like, oh, he's been hunting down his own kind this whole time. And that's why a lot of people love it. Also the mystery of it. The mystery of it is more popular than an actual answer.
Yeah, I think a lot of movies do that as well, and that's not a shot to this or that trope either, but I agree. I think it's a thing where the ambiguity of it, it's a hard word, is what really brings that storyline home, rather than the work and the execution, because that's really my big issue with the movie, is there are a few things in execution that I just didn't really like and felt like it could have been handled better. Case in point, just going to get the scene out of the way, because I don't really want to get into it. The scene with Deckard and Rachel, that to me, you know how we talked about Rocky?
Yeah.
Oh, this is worse than Rocky.
You know what? No, like, the thing with Rocky is, like, we have the context of what these two are like, and you know there's nothing insidious there. Mm. And this is just done like, hey, what if that scene happened, but it was far worse, and far worse written, and far worse executed? That's what scene is.
Well, I don't necessarily know that I don't know that it's worse written, because I think the point is supposed to be that, like, Deckard is still, like, not thinking that these are real people. Like, it's supposed to be, for at least the way I perceived it, like a statement on, oh no, he's just like, he's still a fucking dick who is not seeing that these are real people yet. Like, he treated her like an appliance. So it seems intentional to me, like in terms of how it's written, but you know, like you said, it's icky, like, for sure. But like, that's part of why, like, Deckard is not, you know, he's not a hero. Like, it's not the
no.
Oh yeah, like, he's solving the mystery and, you know, he's gonna get these bad. Or I was like, no, he's not a good person. Like, this is not necessarily somebody you're supposed to be rooting for. Like, he's the focus of the story, he's the protagonist, but that doesn't mean he's, you know, the hero.
Yeah. Talking about standout performances, though, who is your standout performance in this movie?
I mean, it's Rutger Hauer. Like,
yeah.
It has to be Rutger Hauer, right? Like, there's no...
I think Harrison Ford's second, but he's a clear second. And that's not a shot to Harrison. He does great in this movie.
That's not. He's great. This is one of his best performances, in my opinion.
It is, but ironically, I actually like seeing Young just a little more. It's big. It's Sean? Like a little yeah. I'm bad with names today. Sean Young, I like a little more as Rachel, just because she just makes me feel like I am watching someone who hasn't experienced much of anything in their entire lives, and you're just seeing how like forward, but also how uncertain they are about everything. And Rachel just, Sean just really does get that as Rachel.
Yeah,
it's
agree
just
with that.
It's just too good. It's just really too good for me to ignore.
No, she plays the like the wide eyed sort of look very, very well.
Rutger Hauer, though, I think is the clear number one.
I mean, he was cooking.
Yeah,
there's just a presence he has.
He's seen things you wouldn't believe, you know? He's got the presence that he has seen things you wouldn't believe.
It's a great speech, and the little bit I researched is it is one of the most iconic speeches of all time, I believe. Please correct me if I'm wrong here.
No, it's definitely one of the most iconic film speeches of all time.
So, it's a fantastic speech, but I think well before that, from his first scene on, there's just this presence the character has, whereas you don't want him to leave the screen.
Yeah, it's like, what's this guy gonna do?
When he's not on screen, you're wondering, what is Roy Batty doing right
now? And when he is on screen, you're like, what is he doing right now? Because this is very, yeah, exactly. This is an energy. There's just an energy about him where you're like, this guy is terrifying, but fascinating to watch. It's like when you're in a tiger enclosure at the zoo, you're like, this is scary. Well, not even scary. It's like, this is unsettling, but I cannot take my eyes off him. Like, what's he doing? He's just chewing the scenery, even just with his fucking eyes. Like, it, you know how good of an actor you have to be to chew scenery, and you're not even saying anything?
He has those, yeah, like, wide eyes going on, to where it's just like, this man is deranged. He's insane. Yeah. And then by the end of the movie, he is essentially... killed his god. He, like, what?
Nietzsche would be proud.
In his underwear, going through walls, he's dying. Like, this man is at the end of his rope, and you get that. Like, it doesn't feel out of left field, even as crazy as that scene is. And it's a weird thing to where it's in the same tone as what the Pris scene is, but I think it fits well, way better with Roy Batty.
Well, because it doesn't leave you emotionally scarred.
That too. Because there's a little bit of comedy to him putting his head through the wall.
Yeah. You're like, oh, he's not taking Deckard seriously as a threat at all.
Yeah. And then you get that ending where you think he's going to kill Deckard, and instead he shows this last bit of mercy. And you as the audience, or at least for me, that's where I went, well, shit, I feel like he is the secret protagonist of this movie.
Yeah,
I like, feel kind of bad, even though he did some bad shit. He was,
yeah,
just
but the
trying
end,
to
at the
live.
End, you're like, you know what? Pretty chill. Yeah, it's pretty
yeah,
chill.
Pretty
move.
Chill, but
well, with the way chill. He dies, like by just, you know, letting Deckard live. Like, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's got chill.
Yeah, I also think like that's it. Like that's his most triumphant moment. Because when he could just like fall and everyone would like understand, like, oh yeah, he kills Deckard, he proves to be the superior being physically and everything. He's like, no, I'm alive, I live. It's like, I am sentient, I choose my own path, and he saves Deckard. It's like, I feel like that's the most triumphant moment in the movie.
Mm-hmm. It's a very heroic moment. For it's weird to say,
which is crazy after all the murders we've seen him commit or oversee.
Yeah,
yeah.
To whereas for all the bad Deckard's done, that's the thing that really it finally clicks, and he 100% he's like, this has gotta, I'm not doing this anymore, this is wrong. And that's where he goes to get Rachel, and we get the full ending there. But it's that moment to where it's that one last, I think, I don't know if this is what Ridley Scott was going for, but to me it came across as like one act of kindness can change somebody. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. That was a really nice way to go with it.
Yeah, no, I think there's part of that there, and I don't even necessarily know if it's like one act of kindness, but more of I guess an act of humanity. You know? Yeah. Where it's like, okay, well, he's like, all right, I guess I'll fucking help this guy. Like, I got nothing else going on. Like, I'm gonna die. Let me prove him wrong by being like, yeah, no, like, I'm not just a, you know, a stapler or a calculator. Like, I am a thing that lived. Like, when he says, like, I've seen things you wouldn't believe, and all these moments will be lost, like tears and rain. It's like, yeah, because like he was a being that was alive. Like, he was there, and now that's just, you know, not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah, his life. It's like, I think the biggest way of saying it is like his life was precious, and nobody knew that till the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think where it really clicks, and again, this is just my experience watching the movie for the first time, where it really clicked and it just brought it home that Batty was the most human out of the entire cast when you really look at it. You look at the police department, you look at Deckard, you look at even Rachel, like, to an extent. Like, and then the creators of the replicants. There's a level of just apathy to them. They feel like the robots. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, they feel like they're the Terminator. And instead, we see at the end of the movie, like, the real emotional scene is coming from the last, well, kind of the last replicant that Deckard was hunting. So, just a beautiful moment. Fantastic speech. I think it is the main thing people remember about Rutger Hauer in his performance here, and as they should.
I mean, it's second place to his role as Morgan Edge in season two of Smallville. Actually, no, season three of Smallville. let me let me correct myself. Season three of Smallville. So, you know, and, you know, he's in Batman Begins.
True that.
But that's third place after Blade Runner. So the ranking, Rutger Hauer power rankings, Smallville,
is he Blade the Runner. Boss in...
He's the one mm-hmm. who, like, kicked Earl. Earl's his name. He kicked Morgan Freeman's Lucius Fox down to Applied Sciences. And then he gets fired at the end. And then he's like, didn't you get the memo? And you're like, damn, Rutger Hauer. Your ass didn't get the memo. You're fired, bitch.
That is one of, like, the best moments in cinema history. It's just so good. But I also
he has two.
He's got two. He's putting up numbers. Rutger Hauer's putting up iconic cinema numbers.
You were saying, Drew?
Like I was saying, like, the Smallville one is a bit like, it's got a hard to top the Smallville one, because it's like, not only is it tied to just the amazing opening song of Smallville, but also it's like, he brought Morgan Edge to life. Like, I thought like Morgan Edge would always be a bit too hammy for live action and everything, and it's like, he absolutely kills it. Oh, man. The guy barely misses, does he? It's like, does he have a miss?
I don't know that he has the capacity to miss. I tell you what, if we're talking about Rutger Hauer, there's a movie that I need to watch where he is the bad guy in it, and he's like a terrorist or whatever, and these New York cops are trying to catch him. The movie's called Nighthawks, and guess who the cops are, Taylor?
Who are they?
Billy Dee Williams and Sylvester Stallone.
That's, oh man, I gotta see this movie. I'm looking through his IMDb right now, because I have got to see.
I gotta see his Nighthawk streaming somewhere, because that movie looked
hard. Do you know when this movie generally came out? This is this 70s, is off the rails now.
Maybe, yeah, who cares? We knew this was gonna be a shorter one anyway. Everyone knows Blade Runner's good. Like, we're not reinventing the wheel here by being, you know, nerds on a movie podcast talking about Blade Runner. All right, let's talk about Nighthawks. 1981.
1981. Nighthawks with, oh man, what a cast.
What a fucking cast, bro. Directed by Bruce Malmuth. What else is Bruce Malmuth? Let's just turn this into a Wikipedia search. Oh, he also directed, oh, he acted in The Karate Kid. He didn't direct The Karate Kid. He directed Where Are the Children? He directed other things that I haven't seen. Point being, at some point we gotta watch Nighthawk just so we can see where it ranks on the the Rutger Hauer power rankings.
Is this gonna be a thing? Are we going
No,
to,
you
like,
know what? I'm
gonna
say it's gonna be
episode?
A thing. And
that's
I'll,
her next
I'll,
tour.
And I'm gonna, you know, we're gonna use this as an episode to just launch some new initiatives. We said we're gonna brainstorm what we want to call the spotlight. I would like to put forth the idea that, you know, as the show goes on, if we're just really blown away by someone's performance, we add them to the Rutger Hauer power rankings, and he will be the benchmark by which the power of their performance is judged based on his performance in this.
I like that.
So there you go. You know,
Drew, how do you feel about this?
Like, I think it could be interesting. I say, let's go for it.
Part of it is because I just like rhyming Rutger Hauer with power. I think it's just fun.
I've noticed.
Yeah. So think about that.
And after his performance here, I mean, who could disagree?
Yeah, who could disagree? Who could argue?
Yeah, I know we're kind of being a little facetious, like, for real, though. Like,
no, but he's great.
He's fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, he's
like, this
really fucking good.
One of the most, like, this reminds me a lot, and again, this is the first time I've seen Blade Runner. It reminds me a lot of what I thought of Heath Ledger in Dark Knight. Like, there's just a, oh yeah, like,
no,
what I just saw was, yeah. To whereas, whether you are a casual movie fan, whether you are a diehard movie fan, you watch it and you're like, that person has something.
Yeah, you're like, this is their performance. And yeah. Tying it into what we were talking about earlier, you know, not to keep going back to Dune 2, but a lot of people have been saying that about Austin Butler as Fade Rautha. And it's the first thing I've seen him in that's not an episode of Zoe 101 or Arrow. And I gotta say, I might be on the Austin Butler train now.
I have not seen it, so I cannot do anything for that yet.
Well, I might have to put him on my Rutger Hauer power rankings.
When I heard that Austin Butler was Fade, and I was like, Elvis?
Yeah,
Alright. And then what I heard was he's doing like a Stellan Skarsgård impression, and he's crushing it the entire time.
Oh my god, he's actually.
And I was like,
dominating.
You know what? That's awesome. There you go, man. But, damn, what a tangent. That was an all-timer.
That was an all-timer. That should go on our own internal Rutger Hauer power rankings for tangents. Yeah. You know, so it's so rare that we just pull up Wikipedia and just start scrolling and searching people's filmography in the middle of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Normally that's after the episode or before it.
It's because everyone knows Blade Runner fucking rips.
It's a good thing we didn't go to Harrison Ford's. We'd be here.
Oh my god, that's
forever.
Too much. But yeah. You know, side note though, what a freaking streak for Harrison Ford in this period. All right, you got Blade Runner 1982. You got Return of the Jedi, which sure he hated, but it's still, you know, big successful movie like 1983. What was Indiana Jones? I'm going to his filmography now. I don't give a fuck anymore. Let's see. Let's see. Talking
79?
To Phil Time. So, okay, hold on. This man, yeah, definitely 79. So, really even 77, if we want to get crazy. Because he had Star Wars and something called Heroes. Then he has something called Force 10 from Navarone in 80 or 78. Never heard of it. But then he's got, in 1979, Hanover Street, don't know what that is. But then you got Apocalypse Now. You got The Frisco Kid, never heard of it. But then you got more American Graffiti. So damn, he just didn't get enough of that American Graffiti. So then you got 1980, Empire. 81, Raiders of the Lost Ark. 82, Blade Runner. 83, Return of the Jedi. 84, Temple of Doom. What was this man on? All right? He's just insane.
It was his time to shine.
And now he's going to be in Captain America. Like, all right. All right, guys.
We could have went to 90s with Air Force One. That's a very underrated film.
That's a fucking great movie right there. You're right. But see, there's not enough, like, there's not, I mean, you know, shit, there are some fucking heaters. There were some fucking heaters because Neil also
got some heaters.
People fuck with Patriot games.
Harrison Ford, look, man.
The Fugitive, always.
Harrison Ford, as far as I know, never got in any huge trouble or anything. Yeah, sure, he doesn't like, it seems like from the outside looking in, I'm not going to speak for him or anything. I don't
get the feeling
he's a massive fan of Star Wars.
Yeah, which
even so, man, I do respect the fact that he's just a guy who like does his job, and he's like, okay, my hobby is I want to fly planes, so I'm gonna fly planes.
Yeah, which someone should
I wish he'd fly him a little better.
Yeah, but someone that's should probably it. Like, all right, Callista, I need you to start tamping down on that because he's gonna hurt himself.
Yeah,
like we gotta.
Yeah,
we
I gotta wish he'd fly him a little better, this. But other than that, like,
yeah, other than that,
good
hey.
For you, dude. All right, guys. What are your favorite moments from Blade Runner? Drew, let's start with you.
I like the beginning when we get Decker with at the station, everything, he's being pulled out of retirement, everything. I think it's a great character building moment and shows us everything you need to about Decker. I, of course, love every scene in Tyrell's office, especially because of that awesome sunset. And, you know, I like it. I know this is technically in Tyrell's office, but I like the owl scene. Just like the, how is delivered. It's like,
wait, so Drew, you would say you like their owl?
Exactly.
Oh, well, there we go. I'm glad somebody does.
Yeah.
He never like answered, you know?
Yeah, he never answered, but I do like their owl.
I'm glad. As for my favorite moments, I mean, obviously, Roy Batty's speech at the end. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit is just absolutely...
Like, that's just a given.
Just absolute sauce. And I'll also steal one from Drew in that every scene in the office is just beautiful to look at. But I would also like to throw in the end when Gaff's like, oh, it's a shame she won't live forever, but who will? And you're like, damn. Bars, Edward James Olmos. Bars. So there you go.
What about you, Taylor?
I actually am going to echo everything Tristan said. I'm going to echo what you said, too, about the beginning. I really did like the intro to that and the setup to him being forced to go back and hunt down these replicants because he does not want to do it. And then we kind of... I like how the movie doesn't straight up tell us. Like, what happened, how he retired, all that stuff. It's enough for the viewer to get it.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not in this anymore.
Yeah, and then it's, well, you know what? You don't do this. And really, then you're like,
you
okay.
You have a choice, so bitch.
The reluctant protagonist here that we then realize throughout the entire film is very flawed. And then by the end of it, he goes through a journey for the better. Thankfully, and we go through a journey to realize that, again, the humans are really more like the robots, or at least what they perceive are the robots, than the actual replicants. In terms of least favorite moments, I mean, just the Rachel and Deckard scene. That's literally the only scene I didn't like.
Yeah. And of course, the death scene.
Yeah, that's with Pris. Yeah,
I don't like
yep, that. Yeah, like that too. Those two scenes just...
I don't like it.
The Pris scene, like it. It just doesn't work because it... The thing with Batty, why it does... Because
it's the stuff of nightmares.
Yeah, well, that... And again, the thing with Batty is Batty, we just saw him kill his creator. So, him having this existential crisis, and also he's dying, it's far more like, yeah, I get it. I get why he's going through it right now. With Pris, I don't know. It's just something about her character. Like, Daryl Hannah does great in it. I think her best performance is in Kill Bill Volume 2. But at the same time, I think she is, to me, the lackluster member of the four replicants, which might be a hot take, but...
She didn't really get much to do other than manipulating Sebastian and then being fucking terrifying. Which, yeah. She's great at being terrifying, so you know.
Which I did like the same with Sebastian, having that aging disease to where he kind of has the same problem the replicants do. So that was a nice little parallel there. Final thoughts, it's a fantastic movie, nonetheless. I actually am more excited for the sequel because I have heard great things about the sequel. I'm excited to see what they actually build on. I know Harrison Ford's in it, so I'm very curious to see what they do there. I'm wondering if Sean Young is also in it or not, and wondering if anybody else comes back or, you know, if it's just going to be Ryan Gosling in a new cast. Tristan, what are your final thoughts on Blade Runner?
It's a great movie. It's an iconic movie. It's an important piece of film history, and it's not always as appreciated as it should be, or at least it wasn't in its time. And, you know, unfortunately, it's maybe its sequel fell under the same trap financially. But we will talk about that next week when we talk about what many would say is the better movie.
Drew is not one of those people. Drew, what are your final thoughts on Blade Runner?
Apparently not.
I think it's a pretty great movie. Like, again, you see its inspiration everywhere. And it really does like hold up in a way, especially of our playing God now. Oh God, why have we not learned from the movies, TV shows, and literally every other time we've tried to play God? But you know, like that's a stuff for future us to worry about and potentially suffer for. For now, I'm just glad we got through Blade Runner and everything. It's a really good movie that does make you question how would we as people look at new life and how would we react to it all. It's really good. Also, yes, I agree. Yes, Harrison Ford could do no wrong during this era of his career. I kind of feel bad that he's
hot streak.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad that he just doesn't want to do these films and he just keeps getting dragged back into it.
He's so good
at
it.
Hey, he seemed real excited about doing 2049. That was like the first time I was like, oh, damn, it seems like he's in, you know, at least in one of his iconic roles that he's revisiting. It's like, damn, he's caring. Like, you watch him in 2049 compared to him in Force Awakens, you're like, all right. One of these was nearer and dearer to Harrison's heart than the other. I'll say that.
Even so, though, a thing I will say about Harrison Ford is, like, even when he's phoning it in, he's still a top-tier actor.
Still leagues ahead of most other people.
Yeah. So, he's still great, even when he's phoning it in. So, Force Awakens, yeah, you can tell he's phoning it in, but at the same time, you're like...
But it's like, damn,
it's so great, still to see fun. Han Solo. It's still fun. That's not how the Force works. It's an iconic line. One of the only lines that I think everybody unironically loves about the sequels unanimously. So
I also love the irony that throughout the sequels and everything, it's like that line is so appropriate to so much stuff that happens.
I was trying to get through that without trying to bring us into a Star Wars tangent, and then Drew was like, "You know what, Taylor? I got a grenade for you."
I just pulled the pin. Taylor, I'm sorry, you gave me a grenade. I pulled the pin.
And Drew's just making a lot of statements on this episode.
He really is.
I don't know how the audience...
It really feels like you just don't want to be on the 2049 one, and you're trying everything you can just to be like...
Yeah, it sounds like you're just trying to stir the pot. Normally, that's my job, you know?
It really
is. I'm the instigator. But Drew is... He's on one today.
It's been really hard to host this one, I'll tell you.
Like, I'm just letting my thoughts be known. It's like, there's no... It's like... Also, it's like, again, I'm not at my normal self. Again, it's tax season.
Tax season, Drew, is different. It hits different. Let's go ahead and get out of here in this episode that just, it was something that happened on this podcast.
I'm just going to get mine out of the way early. Guys, if you want to find me, you can find me on @DrewGarrison_ on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, you can find me on Longbox Hunters. Me and Tristan are going to have a very special episode coming up next. What that is, I'm going to let Tristan decide if we keep it secret or not.
I mean, I'm trying to think of like a pun to say, you know, it's, I'm looking out the window. It's kind of dark out there, but then again, it is night. So there you go. You do with that information what you will, listeners.
Well, I'm now going to have to post that episode out of order because the next episode's going to be the Wonder Woman.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Yeah, no, next episode is Wonder Woman Historia. It's a great episode. Don't post that out of order. That's a great episode.
Okay. And then it'll be something Batman related.
Then it'll be, well, we didn't say Batman. We just said it's going to be dark and there's a night. You know, that could be a lot of things, Taylor. Yeah, a lot of things are dark and involve knights. Am I talking about a knight like a suit of armor? Or am I talking about a knight like it's night outside? Am I talking about knight like those are the only two knights, I think?
We could,
but
we could have been talking about the question or the shadow or the
could have been talking about Midnighter, you know?
Well, anyways, Tristan, what are you working on? Where could people find you?
As always, I'm cranking out articles over at Screen Rant. Please give your boy a read, because I have to pay my taxes. You can find me on the socials, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at BackIssueBens. And as Drew mentioned, you can find me on the Longbox Hunters.
Drew already said where you can find him and what he's working on. So as for me, you can find me in the Discord, link for which is in the description of this episode. Chat with us about your thoughts on Blade Runner. How do you feel about the villain? How'd you feel about really us also doing two episodes in a row where a character has confronted their, I guess, maker in a way between Truman Show and this? So,
I was about to say, wait, what was the last one we did?
Didn't intend for that in very different ways. I mean, Jim Carrey didn't crush Ed Harris's skull like a watermelon.
Like I mean, if he had, though, that would have been pretty cool, honestly.
Eh, it would have gave me vibes of the number 23, and I didn't want that.
That's fair.
I want to thank Tristan for joining me. I want to thank Drew for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in to this very unhinged episode. And we will see you next week with a brand new episode of Nerds Top Movies.